Welcome to Grid Talk, a series of conversations with the leaders and innovators shaping the 21st century grid. Hosting the podcast is Marty Rosenberg, an award-winning energy journalist. The series is sponsored by the Department of Energy's Office of Electricity Advanced Grid Research Division. Now, here's Marty Rosenberg with Grid Talk.
Hi, and welcome to Grid Talk. Today we have with us Nate Johnson, who's the Vice President of Development of ORPC, and we're going to talk about some exciting new news in the area of marine energy development in the United States. Hi, Nate. How are you today?
I'm terrific. How are you?
Good. So I focused on you when a news blurb came out just several weeks ago about the Department of Energy deploying $16 million in seed money to get two projects really underway in terms of tidal and marine energy. Tell me what that grant's going to enable you to do, and tell us a little bit about ORPC, where you've come from, what you're doing. Are you startup mode? Are you in production mode? Are you bringing money in the door by your projects? Give us a picture.
Yeah, that's a lot to cover in less than a half an hour. But yeah, I'll give you a little bit of background on ORPC. We were actually founded in 2004, so we've actually been around for a while now. What we do is develop technology that produces electricity from moving water, so rivers, tides, ocean currents. And we also have a development team that I'm part of that's responsible for inserting that technology into a marketplace where it's economically, environmentally, and socially appropriate. And that's a new technology, a new industry. So finding those right early adopters is really important, and it has been a big part of our success.
So help us understand what you mean by new, because two decades ago, when I was running a couple of energy magazines, we had articles about Verdant Power sticking a turbine into the East River of Manhattan and trying to learn about capturing electricity from river currents and tides. How has the technology changed since then, and why is it still considered in need of support from the federal government?
Yeah, it's a great question. And you're right that, you know, that for decades, folks have been trying to harness marine energy. And, you know, I would say it's still new because there's still only a handful of companies around the world that have achieved that. And it's a harsh environment. It's complex. Certainly, the need is and the uniqueness of marine energy is a huge value, especially on tidal river technology, where it can be considered baseload power for the grid. It's a really unique aspect of a renewable energy source, where compared to wind and solar, where it's intermittent and less predictable. So, I think there's always been that intrigue about how to harness that, but it's not easy to do. You know, I think ORPC is really focused on how do we continue to refine a core technology that that we call our cross-flow turbine. So, unlike others like Verdant, you mentioned, that kind of look like an underwater wind turbine, ours looks, we call it a helical cross-flow turbine. So, it kind of looks like the old-fashioned push mowers. It has foils that are shaped like an airplane wing that create lift, that are connected with struts to a shaft, and that shaft turns the generator to produce electricity, which is then sent to shore. So, you know, I think that, you know, where we are and where an industry are is, you know, to continue to get those devices in the water, learn from getting devices in the water. And the other aspect, when you mentioned about kind of a new technology, is I think generally building market awareness. A lot of folks aren't aware that there are technologies out there that can produce electricity from tides or from rivers that that aren't dammed. So, you know, we really focus on not only getting devices in the water, but working with communities or customers to build awareness in different regions. And try to grow that marketplace. So that's a big part of what we do.
I think it would guide us all if you just really quickly address the question, are you profitable or are you in startup mode right now?
Well, yeah, that's, you know, we could still call ourselves a 20-year-old startup because of a lot of those elements in the industry. We have generated revenue both through initial power purchase agreement, which we continue to maintain in Maine, but also through device sale, as well as other elements, consulting elements. So, you know, I think as we grow, there'll be different ways that we generate revenue. So that would be through sale of electricity generated, so power purchase agreements. Again, we have one of those in Maine for tidal energy. We have one that we're negotiating in Alaska for a river project. And then as the industry grows, I think there'll be probably be an addition of outright device sales as well.
So we're To sum it up, we're still in the pioneer stage. This is the Wild West in terms of getting this off the ground.
I think we're somewhere between the pioneers. I would say those are two separate things, the pioneer stage and the Wild Wild West. I think we might be beyond, I think ORPC as a company is beyond Wild Wild West stage. There may be others that are out there that are still at that stage. But, you know, certainly that we are continuing to pioneer, especially in various markets.
Okay, so just to help people get excited about this, as I am, it doesn't take long to scratch around on the internet before you read things like, Alaska has the potential of getting 100% of its energy needs from tides. Is that true? And what does that mean? Is this something that could be addressed in 50 years or a shorter time horizon?
That is somewhat true. I would add to it. It actually, Alaska has an opportunity to produce way more than it needs and produce other forms of electricity, transportable electricity from tidal energy. So I'll try to quantify that. And it has to be done over time and responsibly. But Alaska, as characterized through the National Labs, has 18 gigawatts of tidal energy potential in Cook Inlet alone. There's more outside of Cook Inlet. We're really focused on Cook Inlet at the moment.
So really quick, where is Cook Inlet and how close to population is it?
So the head of Cook Inlet is Anchorage, and it kind of goes out towards the southwest, down the Kenai Peninsula on the eastern shore. There's a lot of activity, energy exploration activity already in terms of oil and gas in the inlet. That gas supply is actually dwindling rapidly, whereas by the end of the decade, the Cook Inlet may be out of gas. And so there's really an urgent need to kind of look at alternatives. So when you talk about a gigawatt, you know, that Alaska has a main electrical grid that they call the railboat grid that runs from Homer down on the Kenai Peninsula, which is adjacent to Cook Inlet, up through Anchorage and up north to Fairbanks. And that major grid that is the vast majority of the population in Alaska peaks at about 900 megawatts, so a little less than a gigawatt. And so when you look at 18 gigawatts of tidal energy potential, there's not only an opportunity to really supplement the grid because there's other forms of renewables as well, but to look at what are some of the other uses of power, especially as the industry scales, costs come down. You can look at things that are like production of hydrogen, production of green ammonia, or other applications. And that's really exciting. And Alaska is really, really excited about the opportunity around tidal energy.
So let's get to the news now. We've been focusing a lot on the federal government dedicating a lot of resources through the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act and the Inflation Reduction Act. And the BPC is specifically giving you $9.5 million for the first phase of this project. And as I understand it, you and a organization in Washington State will be competing for funding for a second broader phase for $35 million.
I'll clarify that a little bit. So so each proposal for phase one is $3 million. And then after that first roughly 1 year, phase one, proposal will be selected for an additional $29 million.
Okay.
So it's up to $32 million in federal funding for the opportunity.
So tell us what you hope to do in the first year and when does that start? And if you're successful, what would you do with the second phase?
Yeah, so the first phase is really to, there's a number of SMART goals, metrics that DOE requires. It really is focused on advancing a technology selection, advancing knowledge of the site, advancing the permitting licensing process to what's called a draft FERC license application, and then also working with the community to identify community benefits, supply chain opportunities, economic development opportunities. I would say those are the big pieces of that. We feel that our opportunity in Cook Inlet is very much aligned with the work that we've already done to date. So we've had a joint development agreement for a number of years with the utility that adjacent to the site. We have what's called a FERC preliminary permit for the site itself. We've already worked with the national labs to do some high fidelity site characterization of the resource. So we feel like we have a really good position to move that forward and really continue to build on that in phase one. So it's really about what does a project ultimately look like, and phase one, the outcome of that will be a big part of that. One of the unique things that we've done in phase one, and it was somewhat dictated by the nature of the funding opportunity, is we're looking at actually multiple tidal energy technologies and going through a process of determining which ones are most suitable for that site, or it could be one, it could be two. But we're looking at what we consider the three leading tidal technologies, U.S. tidal technologies. And we think that's important because, as you said, this is funded through the bipartisan infrastructure law. We really want to try to maximize U.S. manufacturing content, U.S. content, period. So in addition to ORPC, we've actually brought in Verdant Power, which you've mentioned had a project in the East River previously, and another company called Aquantis, which is based in California, which is also developing tidal energy. And so we'll go through a process and select after phase one, likely two technologies to continue to work towards ultimately implementation at that site.
So this is going to be two different devices that will generate 1 to 5 megawatts.
Yeah.
And it's a remote part. It's a remote community. Is it the community on the grid right now?
Community's on the grid. And it's where the cable would come ashore is a community called Nikiski. And so Nikiski is very heavily involved in the oil and gas industry. There's supply chain companies there now. They have vessels, they have port facilities. And we're working very closely with them. So we're working very closely with one of the oil and gas companies to support the project, working very closely with the utility, which is Homer Electric, to define what the value is to their grid and what that looks like. And then ultimately, as you said, we want to demonstrate multiple technologies. DOE has a target of 1 to 5 megawatts under this program. So that could be, a combination of different technologies and number of devices. And then we want to be, and this is a strong emphasis as well, want to show a path towards commercialization. So it's one thing under this project to get, several devices in the water. It's another to really show the path to having many devices in Cook Inlet, really having a large penetration onto the grid and the benefits that come along with it, but also evaluating some of the other opportunities, economic development opportunities, energy opportunities associated with tidal energy. So those are all big project with a lot of different partners, but we feel very good about that.
So help paint the big picture right now. You talk about wanting to raise awareness of all these potential new sources of energy, and that 10% of European power by 2050 they hope to get off from tidal power. I've been to Scotland and the UK, and they've been experimenting with wave energy technology as well as tidal energy. Is the U.S. behind the eight ball in terms of other parts of the world ahead of us? And if so, why? And how fast can we close that gap?
Sure. I think the upside potential is huge. Just in the UK, they announced that their target is 11% or the potential for 11% of tidal energy by 2050, which is roughly 11.5 gigawatts.
That would be 11% of their energy needs?
Yes.
Okay.
As a potential from tidal energy and in terms of what could be harnessed. Now, putting that in perspective, you know, there's France is a really good European country that has targets towards tidal energy as well. But in Cook Inlet alone in Alaska, we've got the potential for 18 gigawatts. So, you know, I think that the potential in the U.S. Is very high. I will say there's been more types of devices and different devices deployed in Europe. They have an entity up in the Orkney Islands called the European Marine Energy Center that has deployed quite a few different technologies. There's been a project that's now decommissioned in Northern Ireland that was one of the first. So I think they're doing some good things, including some of the government incentives. In the UK, they have Contracts for Difference, which is a ring fence around tidal energy for above market price incentives. I think those are the type of things that really stimulate a new industry. I think the U.S. has, we may be behind a number of devices, tidal energy devices that are in our water right now, but I think there's an opportunity to catch up on that very quickly. And I think we've learned a lot. I think we have a lot of experience. ORPC has a lot of experience in how to deploy devices and operate devices. We probably have put more devices in the water than any company in the world.
So let me ask you real quick if there's a danger here of getting tagged with the same kind of negative imagery that wind power got, particularly off of Cape Cod when the late Ted Kennedy and others said, we don't want to be looking at turbines when we're sailing our boats. Ostensibly, we could be putting tidal and wave energy off the East Coast and the West Coast, and that would avoid the need for a lot of land-based transmission by just having the stuff carried ashore right off of population centers. Do you think there's a big hurdle to get acceptance of that? Do you see that being washed away with this major push to really get our grid redefined and reconfigured?
Yeah, I think there's I think ORPC has done a terrific job in terms of social acceptance. I think one of the things that's different about tidal energy right now and the wave energy industry as well compared to wind is wind has kind of coalesced around a single type of turbine design. You know, you see the three-bladed axial flow turbine. Tidal and wave, there is many different configurations. So I think that having social license around all those isn't quite there yet. But from ORPC's perspective, and you're right, there's a huge opportunity in the Northeast, Maine, Nova Scotia, in the West, in Washington State, and then certainly in the Pacific Northwest and Alaska. You know, our devices are fully submerged, so we don't have the visual or the noise considerations that wind does.
Any environmental impact with fish?
It's a great question. We have not seen any negative effects to fish. The project that we have in a river environment in Alaska is actually the highest concentration of sockeye salmon in the world, certainly in North America. We've seen tens of millions of adult salmon, hundreds of millions of smolt that have gone through this section of river, and we have yet to see an injury or mortality. That doesn't mean there's zero impact or zero risk, but we think it's very small, both based on the design of our turbines, but also based on where we site them in the water column, and then obviously the innate ability of fish to avoid devices. So we've done a lot of work on there that, you know, every region we go to, you know, we get asked those questions. But I think that between the lack of visual aspects, and there are some tidal devices that are on the surface, so, you know, that doesn't go for all companies, the lack of environmental effects. But then also I mentioned kind of previously on the benefit to the grid. There's been a study that Pacific Northwest National Lab did recently, and there's been some in Europe as well. When you can have a predictable form of baseload power, renewable power, that has, that's a big differentiator between wind and solar.
But the tides don't run 24/7. There's periods where it maximizes and periods when it's flat.
Yeah.
You're just saying that's predictable, that cycle is predictable.
Absolutely. It's predictable for 100 years in the future. And that gap where you're not generating can be pretty easily filled in with battery technologies because it's a short duration and it's a known duration. In fact, in the project in Alaska, the tidal energy project that we're working on, Homer Electric has the largest battery system in Alaska, and it's already in place. So that's another benefit where tidal energy really complements what's there already.
There's talk also of putting marine and tidal in conjunction with solar complexes. Are you looking at that, or is that down the road?
I would say it's not a core focus of ours, but we do vision where, whether it's a river or tidal environment, where our technology is kind of the anchor renewable energy technology because of all the reasons I just mentioned. And that really enables solar or wind to come on and really supplement that grid and reduce the amount of need for batteries and reduce the amount of need for other renewables. So, yeah, certainly I think there's an opportunity to integrate with other form of renewables as well. But there's that increased value from tidal overall kind of holistically provides a better solution.
For those of us who are not fully conversant with what we're talking about here, what's the relative potential of wave versus tidal energy? Because I saw once that saying waves alone has the potential of generating two times what the world currently produces in electricity.
Yeah, the wave energy resource is significant. In fact, it may, in theory, be a larger global resource than tidal. It's challenging trying to, I think there's, the diversity in the amount of wave energy technologies out there is very wide right now, hasn't coalesced at all around certain types of technologies. I think that in general, the technology readiness for wave technologies are behind tidal globally.
Well, the last I checked in, there was a device in Scotland called Palamas that was like a sea serpent that was articulated. And as it undulated in the waves, it was able to capture the kinetic energy. Are there other devices out there? And do you see potentially this merging of putting devices out there that capture tides and waves? Or is there a possible synergy here?
There's definitely synergies. Palamas is no longer operational. They have been gone for a little bit, but there are numerous tidal technologies, Europe and in the U.S. as well. The West Coast is in particular, California, Washington.
You're talking about wave now, right?
Wave, yep.
Okay.
There are numerous technologies. Some are, some are point absorbers. Some are, integrated into breakwaters. There's a wide range. I think the areas where you get high tidal flows and predictable, consistent wave action are not always overlapped. I don't think there's, on a single site, putting both tidal and wave energy converters may not happen all that frequently. But what I think is something that that you see is developers that have an approach to really engaging with the communities and working through the project development process. I think there's a lot of overlap between wave and tidal. And so you may see some of those same folks involved in both of those segments, but the technologies would be very different.
Take a minute now, and this is really my last major point I'd like to discuss with you. If you're successful in these two phases in Alaska, where do you see this technology in your company going? Will this be remote parts of the country? Will you be coming to the East River of New York again? Will you be doing Chesapeake Bay? How does this roll out in the next decade if everything proves its merit?
Yeah, I think that the opportunity and the funding opportunity in Alaska is really could be a catalyst to tidal energy in general. It a lot of it is, again, building awareness and scaling the technology, which brings down costs, which opens up other markets as well. So I think there are, you know, we certainly would see growth within the Alaska market for sure. Certainly growth in the Northeast and Maine and the Bay of Fundy. Certainly wouldn't discount putting something in the East River. You know, that's a site that doesn't have a technology at the moment. But the other thing to think about is that this can be a U.S. export opportunity as well. So we are actually looking at projects in Europe, and we're looking at projects pretty much on every, we are looking at projects on every continent of the world, with the exception of Antarctica. We are in the process of assembling our first device in Chile. We have lots of interest in other areas of the world, sub-Saharan Africa, on the riverside mostly, Indonesia, Southeast Asia, Australia. So we think that there's an opportunity to really grow globally. And we have a footprint in many of those areas already. So really looking forward to, you know, getting our devices out into those marketplaces and really becoming more of a recognized solution in the energy world.
Thanks, Nate. We look forward to checking back with you and seeing what you're doing in Alaska and beyond.
Absolutely. Thank you for your time.
We've been talking with Nate Johnson, who's the Vice President of Development for ORPC, involved in a startup project in Alaska, a two-phase project, hopefully that will show the capabilities of tidal power. Thanks for listening to Grid Talk, a production of the U.S. Department of Energy's Office of Electricity. We regularly convene conversations with thought leaders in the fast-changing electric sector in America and around the world. Please send us feedback or questions at gridtalk@nrel.gov. And we encourage you to give the podcast a rating or a review on your favorite podcast platform. For more information about this series, now in its fourth year, or to subscribe, please visit smartgrid.gov.
Thanks for listening to Grid Talk, presented by the U.S. Department of Energy Office of Electricity Advanced Grid Research Division. Subscribe through your favorite podcast provider or visit smartgrid.gov for more information.